You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla Desroches. We have some professionals with us here today, and they are Susan Philo. Hello.
Hello.
She's a psychotherapist, or a mental health professional.
Correct.
And Debbie Rogers.
Hello.
Hi. Who is also in the mental health profession. So could you guys talk a little bit about the mental health scene here in Kodiak and what it looks like for people who are seeking mental health help? Because, as you know, we have a few experts in every area here, or a few different areas. So some people think, oh, I got to get my leg checked out, I broke it. And then there's another area saying, oh, I got to get my thoughts checked out, I could use some help with that as well, which is something that most of us go through every once in a while anyway. So why don't you tell us about that?
Well, Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center is our community mental health center, and we have several programs available, and just what most people would think, which would be, you know, counseling services, individual, group, family, couples counseling. Also, we have an intensive outpatient program for the severely mentally ill called the Community Support Program. We also have programs for people struggling with substance use disorders. That would include teens in our Prime for Life program, and also adults. There's an adult education program. And for people with more intensive problems, we have an intensive outpatient program called Safe Harbor. We also have an anger management class. Debbie, help me. What are some of the other programs? Oh, I forgot the one that I run, which is the school clinicians in the school program, which is where we have mental health professionals in the school to help support kids to do their best academically. So
we also have the psychiatric emergency services program where we team with the hospital. So if someone is at the hospital for a psychiatric emergency, meaning they're usually suicidal, or they are heavily intoxicated and having those thoughts, then we intervene and do an assessment and help determine a plan of care for them and connect them with resources locally so that they can have a good aftercare plan and hopefully not have continued instances of this.
Okay, and so I'm going to ask you a little bit about your backgrounds and about how you distinguish between a psychotherapist or a mentalist, or there are so many different names, it seems. Carly, why don't you introduce yourself, because you are also at the table.
Oh, sure. My name is Carly Franz, and I'm the marketing communications specialist for Providence.
Yeah, she's going to help us communicate today.
Yes, as best as I can.
So why don't you guys go ahead and talk about a little bit about yourselves and how you got to Kodiak and how you entered the mental health scene.
Okay, well, my name is Debbie Rogers, and I have been a clinician for a very long time. And like most clinicians, we started out somewhere else as advocates or counselors. And so the difference for in terms of licensing is I have met the criteria that requires education and experience to be licensed. And we have several different licensed clinicians at our office. But I began working in this field, working with domestic violence and sexual assault more than 20 years ago. And went on to do a lot of work in that field, worked with the military and established programs and actually kind of helped to start the foundation for what later became the Victims Advocacy Program in the military. And then I also worked with very, very rural areas in Louisiana because my husband's retired Army. And in those areas, I helped to establish domestic violence programs and sexual assault intervention programs. And then later on, I went to work in the schools, and I did a lot of work with children who come from a wide variety of backgrounds. And again, I saw more trauma there, too, not necessarily sexual assault, but a lot of domestic violence, a lot of substance abuse within the home, and it really affects the children. Plus, I also saw a lot of children who had developmental delays and challenges and helped work with them in terms of managing their emotions, their feelings, learning to cooperate with others. I also did a long period of time where I worked with families who were facing death, a long-term illness. And so that's very special work as well for me. But I came to Kodiak after my husband and I were already living here in Alaska, and he brought me down here for my 25th anniversary, and I fell in love, and I said, oh, my gosh, I love this place so much. And so he transferred jobs, and here I am. So this is my third year here.
So those are some very intense subjects to deal with, dealing with domestic violence and sexual assault. How do you, as a mental health professional, deal with that personally, making sure that you're not getting too closely affected by your work?
Well, the reality is that a mental health professional, just like any other professional, needs to be taking care of themselves too. And I practice what I preach. So that means I preach the importance of getting out and walking and exercising for 30 minutes a day. You don't have to be hardcore. 30 minutes a day is really important. Spending time that is meaningful, doing things that are wonderful for you, that make you feel good. Those are just important parts of wellness in general. And I have to practice that. If I don't, I can really get sucked into some of the things that my clients are going through. And I love my clients very much, but I have to keep myself separate from them so that I can be there for them.
And regular peer supervision is very important.
Absolutely.
For that, and also seeking your own mental health counseling if you're needing it.
Yes.
So we need to, as Debbie says, practice what we preach, and mm-hmm. and mental health services are not just for, you know, what we would, for crazy people. They're for all of us, you know, so that we can perform optimally and be, you know, balanced individuals.
It does seem like the approach to mental health has changed a little bit. Like back in my father's day, going to a mental, getting help or going to see a therapist was very taboo, and it would be not so great to admit that. But when I went to high school, a lot of my friends would see therapists just to, you know, check up, to talk through things, and it was really, really common to talk about just in conversation casually. And that was just the environment I grew up in where that was the attitude. Can you guys speak to that at all?
Yes, absolutely. We practice in what we call the wellness model now, which is very important. And I don't want to take away from Susan. She needs to introduce herself too. But, you know, I love that you said that the concept and the attitude about mental health has changed. It's been changing for the last 200 years to where we are no longer looking at this as a bad thing. The reality is that our thoughts determine how we feel a lot of the times. If we are having bad thoughts, negative thoughts, or we have something that's going on in our world that's not okay, we don't feel good. And when we don't feel good, we don't do the things that make us feel good and keep us feeling well. So it starts this downward cycle. And so the idea of stepping in and going and seeing someone is a positive thing. And when I said the wellness model, what we're looking at is, you know, most people have been sick a little bit during the past 12 months, you know, and they might have had a cold, and most of the time it'll go away on its own. Well, behavioral health and mental health is the same thing. Most things kind of go away on their own. But if it's not going away and it's not getting better, or if it's getting worse, you go to the doctor and you talk to the doctor about what to do. Well, with counseling and mental health, you go to see the clinician, and the clinician says, hey, let's see what's going on in your world. Let's do a checkup, basically. And sometimes a very small percentage of people need to see what we call a specialist, and that would be a psychiatrist, and they may need some medication to help them through it. Some people need it long term, but most people don't, just like most illnesses don't require that. So we now have what we call an integrated model, a wellness model, and that's what we encourage. Mm-hmm. Susan?
So I'll introduce myself a little bit as far as my professional background. I've been in the business for 18 years. I've been in Kodiak for almost 7 years now. My husband grew up in Wasilla, Alaska, and he drug me up here kicking and screaming, but now I love it here. So we were in Eastern Washington for almost 40 years before that time. But anyway, my interest developed because my mother was a psychologist, and I got psychoanalyzed all my life, but anyway, so it was kind of natural for me to fall into it. But my background is training and working with children. I worked at Children's Home Society for 3 years, and I also work with actually people of all ages, couples, individuals, group, counseling agency, and also in private practice, and now I've worked here at the Counseling Center at Providence for 6 years almost.
How many therapists or mental health professionals are on the island?
On the island, that's a good question. I would say I'm not sure how many therapists are at Canna now. Probably 4 to 5 there. And then we have also, I think, 3 in private practice. And then there's 3 licensed professionals that work at our center, as well as substance abuse counselors on top of that. Yeah, 10 to 12.
On the whole island.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We actually, I think, have a lot of options for people, a lot of choices for people seeking therapy.
Do you guys often get together and talk about ways to do more outreach or network, or do you guys get together and create a support network? Is it tight-knit around here?
It has been at times. When I first moved here, there was more collaboration. I haven't seen that recently, so I think it was really beneficial. Where I moved from, there was a lot of collaboration, and it was very helpful for the community as well as for us personally.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's more of a formal collaboration, because we do have a lot of informal where people will call each other at different agencies. Mm-hmm. And for instance, last week I spoke with a private practice therapist and said, I can't meet this person's needs because of their work schedule or whatever. And she said, absolutely, I can help out. Send them my way. And so we do collaborate in that respect. But, you know, there was a recent issue that came up here and had to do with substance use. And I'm trying to think of the name of the conference because I was already scheduled. But a large part of the community came together, and many practitioners came together. I think it was called the Take Back Our Community Summit.
Right.
I think that's what it was. Mm-hmm. That was a really good collaborative project. We also had another recent event that was collaborative where Providence sponsored having North Star Behavioral Health come in with a bunch of our veterans from out at the Coast Guard station, and we had a wonderful, wonderful training on serving veterans in our population here and their spouses and families about what their needs are. So again, that was a really good collaborative effort. So sometimes we don't really have a lot of formal, but we do have some, and we certainly work together because it's important and we respect one another.
So I'm curious a little bit about the different areas where your skills are needed. So, for instance, the transient population downtown has been an ongoing issue or has posed certain issues. Have you guys done any outreach as far as the homeless population goes? I think that there's like a pool of 10 consistent people downtown.
Well, I can speak to that because I lead the community support program, and the community support program is for individuals who are seriously mental ill and may have a co-occurring use disorder, a substance use disorder. So one of the things we have to remember is a person can be homeless for a lot of reasons, and one of those is by choice. And so we can't change that, but we can work with people through our outreach program, through Brother Francis and through the library, and try to help them connect with services. But some people who do have a substance use disorder do not want to get better. They don't want to stop using because that is, or they may want to, but they aren't able to, or they don't want to commit to treatment. But for an individual, and we have a lot of people in our community support program who have transitioned from being homeless to being an independent living and long-term independence, which is great. You know, they have all kinds of activities they do together. We have a huge program for that. I don't know if you know that, but we serve about around 50 people who have severe mental illness and or co-occurring use disorders, and or they could be children or teens who are also what we call at risk of becoming homeless or ending up heavily using substances. So we do reach out to that population in a lot of ways, especially through our Brother Francis shelter, and we partner well with them. They're very good to us, and we try to reach out and support them as much as possible. So most of the people that are down in downtown and are homeless have had contact with us in one time or another. Some have stuck with treatment for a while. Some don't want to. Some kind of take advantage of it and say, I just want to get a house and somewhere to live. But then they don't realize that in order to keep that house, you know, you have to be stable. You have to be able to have some income coming in. You have to feel well, and you have to be sober usually in order to be able to keep it. So we try to work with them in that respect, but there's always more work to be done. But our doors are open, and we try to serve anybody who comes through and make sure that they know that there's no stigma coming in, that they're welcome and loved and appreciated for who they are, right where they are. And Providence is founded on serving those who are disadvantaged to begin with. And so that's a very important part of our ministry.
When a person acts up downtown, maybe under the influence of some kind of substance, and they're arrested, is there some kind of step in there that involves consultation for their mental health?
Can be court-ordered, and then they're referred to a counselor to do an assessment, usually an integrative assessment, and then they go with whatever the counselor recommends for treatment. Mm-hmm. And there's we have ASAP program housed in our building. It's separate from our Providence, but they refer people to Canna and to us for services. But, you know, they can be court-ordered, and they don't always follow through with that court order. But other than that, you know, it's up to them to be motivated.
And we do partner up with the probation office in order to serve clients who are coming out of jail, because they go through a period of adjustment. And when they have a good support system for that adjustment, they seem to do better. Otherwise, they will fall back into the same trap again and again, and it's just a cycle. But, you know, when you talk about someone being arrested for that, the reality is that our jails can't hold all of the people. And so there is a measure that was passed that that actually basically just says, unless they're really doing something major, they're not even going to arrest them. They might cite them because they just don't have room to hold everybody for those purposes. And then you also have some people who have severe mental illnesses. Now, that is when we have someone who has schizophrenia or maybe some delusions. Those get a little trickier, and our community is so wonderful. I don't know if people realize how blessed we are, but there are so many good people in this community who do look out for individuals who have mental illnesses and try to get them connected. But those are, if you have something like schizophrenia, just the thought of talking to someone is a scary thing, because in your mind, they could be out to get you. Or they may be trying to force you to take something, or they don't understand because their mind is in a darker, scarier place. And so it does take all of us working together, and we do have a great community. So it is an area we need to keep growing in, though.
Another area that's, I know, a big issue for Kodiak is domestic violence. Can you speak a little bit on that?
Would you like to do that?
Well, I'm not sure what you want to know, you know, as far as it's related to mental health and well-being.
What's the presence of domestic violence? Is it one of the more pressing issues for mental health, or what's the status?
It's definitely a pressing issue for mental wellness of both the partners or couples, both members of the couplet.
And the children, because of the trauma.
Exactly. So trauma, I mean, mental illness and trauma are kind of go hand in hand, unfortunately. So how frequently, you know, are people actually mentally ill who are in that kind of behaviors or that cycle of behaviors? It's very frequent. Usually, I think the statistic is about 40% of men who are abusive do have a mental health diagnosis, and it's usually like an antisocial personality disorder. But the other 60% are just men who had poor models of how to function in a relationship, and also who have poor ability to regulate their emotions, but also women who get involved in that tend to come from a background where they were abused themselves, and it's kind of like all they know, and they're kind of go back into the same pattern that they knew when growing up. But how pervasive it is in Kodiak as compared to other places, I know it's the rate is higher in Alaska than the rest of the nation. I don't know the specific statistics on that. But we do have a great, I mean, the women's shelter, it is very active and very progressive in how they treat anyone who comes in, including men who can be victims themselves. We have safe houses for them. And also we partner up with them to provide mental health services, and we have funding through the state and also our own sliding scale so that money is not a barrier to treatment. But it's Debbie and I frequently see people, you know, and usually the victim, but it's also sometimes the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm. So can I talk a little bit about that trauma for a minute? Mm-hmm. So back in the late 1990s, there was a study that was done, it began, I should say, and it was the start of a longevity study, a long-term study that evaluated what the effect of trauma on children is. Okay? Yes, and that is called ACEs. Someone was whispering to me here in the studio. And but this, so I'll refer to it as ACEs. And ACEs,
adverse childhood experiences.
Thank you very much. And what they found over the years was that when an individual is exposed to different types of trauma in their childhood, it affects them long term in terms of their wellness, not just in terms of their mental wellness, it affects their physical wellness as well. And pretty significantly. So when children are exposed to trauma, whether it is things like gaslighting, which we were talking about a little bit ago, which is where someone is putting someone down and making them feel like they're worthless and making them feel like they're stupid or that there's something wrong with them, when the reality is it's that person who is being the person who's gaslighting or being a mentally abusive individual who's making them feel bad, it sticks with them. So some children, they're in a home where there's really high stress. They may see a parent get abused. They may see a lot of substance abuse. They may have a parent who is incarcerated. They may be placed into the foster care system. They may have to go live with relatives because they're no longer able to be in their home in a stable, functional home anymore. So all of those types of trauma really affect an individual. And we want to get intervention as early on in that as we can, preferably really early on in the relationship where the domestic violence is occurring. And people also call this intimate partner violence now. So as we talked about how mental health has changed and evolved a lot over the years, when I started working in this field many, many, many years ago, domestic violence was only females being perpetrated by males, which that's just not reality. And really what it was is that most people weren't talking about it. Men have a very difficult time coming out and talking about if they were raped or if they were abused physically. But it happens very, very often to both sexes. And it's also changing in another respect, too. We're seeing teenagers become more and more abusive to the adults in their home. We also see many teenagers who are being raised by grandparents now. And so we see domestic violence there, which can also turn into elder abuse. So it is definitely evolving and changing, and our awareness is growing. But what we do know is domestic violence is a pervasive issue in our community and all throughout Alaska. And we're probably one of the communities that's better off than a lot of Alaska, just like we are better off in terms of suicide. Our rates are lower than many parts of Alaska. But it is still pervasive. It is still there, and intervention needs to be done. The sooner, the better. And we have a great amount of resources here in our community for such a small area.
So I'm going to use that as a quick segue to just say, Kodiak, we should be proud that we have clinicians in the school program. You know, that's a big part of catching these issues before kids get too old and getting them the services they need. We know we do interventions in the schools, but then we also refer them to, you know, it makes it a safer handoff to refer them to mental health services when you've got someone you know saying, hey, I think this would really help you. So it's really significant. And the reason that we have such a low rate of suicide is because that's part of it. It's also because we have really great services in this city. But, you know, not enough can be said about early prevention. Not enough. And it's very significant. It's going to save a lot of money and most importantly, a lot of suffering later on.
And the school program provides trauma-informed care, which is another piece that ties with the trauma that we were just talking about in terms of domestic violence and things that are happening in the home. Our program, our school program, is so forward-thinking, and I just love that Susan's here with us because she leads that incredible team. And many, many, many communities across the country are trying to move in the direction of what we already have. And here in Alaska, I don't know of any other area that has what we have. It is what we have here in Kodiak. We have a clinician to serve each one of our schools. And mental health clinicians are not guidance counselors. Our training is completely different. It's like comparing a nurse and an EMT. They are trained in some things the same, but their jobs are very different. Mental health specialists and clinicians are trained to know how to do really strong interventions and treatment. Guidance counselors are trained to help kids succeed in school. and we need them both. So we are very forward-thinking in that respect. But trauma-informed care is something that was really pushed in the last few years. It's still a new term throughout the country, but it is growing, and people are catching on, and we're already there. And we have really good support of the school district and through the principals. What that means is when a child is having a hard time, instead of looking and making the child feel bad, the idea is to teach the child the skills they need to provide them with an environment that allows them to calm down. Most of the classrooms in the school district have what are called calm down kits, so the child can just go over, sit down, and cool off for a few minutes, which is what a lot of people need to do in life, is just go cool off for a few minutes. Don't be so reactive, you know. So they are really trying to pay attention to giving the children what they need in terms of the trauma. So I really am very proud of our clinician team.
All right. Well, it looks like we have just a couple more minutes. Is there anything you guys wanted to add or name drop or whatever you like?
I liked what Debbie started out with, was saying that, you know, if you're sick, you know, you don't have any shame in going to see the doctor. If you're struggling, you know, with anxiety that seems to be, you know, more than you can manage, or feeling really low or having suicidal thoughts, or if you're noticing that you're not able to manage your drinking behavior, or there's other drug use that's kind of getting out of hand, you know, not to be afraid or ashamed to seek help. It's just our brain is an organ like the rest of, you know, our organs are, and it's certainly a healthy choice to make to seek help and say, hey, I think I'm in over my head. And there's a lot of services available in the city, not just Providence, but so many choices for people.
All right. So we've been speaking with two mental health professionals for Mental Health Month, which is May. You've been listening to Talk the Rock. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.